At this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker. He hails from Shivana area. He's going to share on Tradition 11. Help us welcome Huey M.
Hi, everybody. My name is Huey, and I am an addict. And I'm honored to be asked to lead. I thank the convention members and everybody out here that came out this late at night to listen to me. Or maybe you just didn't have a better place to go. Whatever reason that is, I hope that maybe something I might say tonight might touch you and bring me a little closer to you through my candor and honesty. And again, most people would say when they ask me to lead on the 11th tradition, most people go, oh gosh, who wants to lead on those dang traditions, you know? And I must admit, generally speaking, that's where I come from with it too. You know, it's like, oh golly, I get very passionate about that kind of stuff. But when they said the 11th tradition, it is probably one of the most significant things, and I believe ultimately it is the reason I stand here tonight, directly the reason I stand here tonight. And a lot of people think it has to do with maybe going outside and how we advertise on TV and stuff like that. You know, this is a program of attraction rather than promotion. And for me, that's what it's all about. And everything else is a story. Everything else is a story. And I can tell you 15,400 and whatever days ago, when I came into this room at age 19, that the reason I'm here is because of a guy named Dick Breed and a group, a small band of irreverent, outspoken men. Because when I got here at age 19, I didn't want what you were selling. I didn't really believe anything you said. I was way too young 43 years ago to be one of you. And maybe when I got to be 35 or something, I'd come back. And that's exactly the way I got here. I want to tell you, I was tricked into Narcotics Anonymous. I did not come willingly. You know, a guy said, look, why don't you go to some meetings? You know what it's like to use. Why don't you see what it's like to not use? Why don't you give it 6 weeks? And at the end of 6 weeks, if you think you don't have a problem, you can, you'll be able to get a really good buzz on. And unfortunately, that made way too much sense to me. But when I came here, as I said, I was 19, and a guy named Dick Breed spent all day on a Saturday talking to me. This was a wealthy man that had no business spending a day with Huey. I don't know, I still couldn't get it out of my mind. What was this man doing, wasting his time with this barefooted punk kid? And today I know it's the same thing that I try and do one day at a time. And I will never forget the man's name, and I will use it as much as I can. Because that man gave me the light that day. He taught me my lesson about service. But he also made it so there was a crack of hope. You know, people say, well, you had a lot more mileage. You could have kept going. Wow. And the truth is I could. But when I came in, it was after my second suicide attempt. And I want to say that the reason people get to that place in my mind, and the reason Huey got there, was because of a lack of hope and a darkness and a loneliness that very few people can comprehend. And a lot of people in this room can comprehend it. That depth of loneliness that made me the special case, that made me the only person laying in bed at night writing notes about leaving death notes and talking about and thinking about how I could do it and how I was going to get even with the people. You know? And I was I was alone because in 1970, you didn't share with your friends, "Wow, I'm really scared. I'm really lonely. I'm thinking about killing myself." I mean, I had a high quality of friend, and a real high quality of friend, you would still never dare share anything like that. See, this 19-year-old kid had learned, and he'd learned really well from where I was up, where I was brought up. My father was an alcoholic. My mother was a rageaholic. And I was brought up in emotional just disaster. A totally dark and negative place where nothing was possible and you were going to fail. And why would you even try this? When's this bloom going up? You're a loser. And that's the way I was brought up as a little teeny kid. So you strap all that together with the ability to not share with a single soul and a bunch of grown-ups. And I say, you got to go back to when you were 19 to catch this a little bit. But all the grown-ups in the world around me were fine. They were all fine. My mother was fine. My father was fine. You know, the teachers were fine. Everybody was fine. I was the only one that was totally broken. I was the only one, and I couldn't share it with anybody. Because how do you go out and say, "Man, hey, I'm a red monkey. You know, and all you guys are black monkeys, and I'm a red monkey," and I wasn't about to share with anybody that I was a red monkey. I've jokingly said, you know, I walked around that whole part of my life like I had an expired membership in my pocket. And I don't, you know, a membership in life. That at any point, any moment, somebody in authority was going to come up and say, "Let me see your membership." And I was going to have to bull up my way out that, oh, I didn't know it expired. It was an accident, it expired. I didn't know that. I'll get it corrected really soon, kind of expired. And that's how I came into life. I was terrified of it. And I got to tell you, let me give you a little bit of bad news. The bad news is, 42 years later, if my spiritual condition goes a little cock-a-gaga, I still feel like I got a suspended membership. I still start feeling like I don't belong and that I'm different. And so when they asked me to speak on Tradition 11, it's a program of attraction rather than promotion. And I'm going to tell you what got me here. And I want to first declare at that moment in time that it had nothing to do with any steps. It had nothing to do with God. It had nothing to do with anything spiritual. It had totally to do with a group of men that I met in these rooms that were, for the first time in my life, I met an authentic man. I'd never met one. Everybody in my life was a liar. They were a liar. But when I came into these rooms, these few irreverent, outspoken, cussing men were having a lot of troubles and problems. And they were scared, and they were lonely, and they were having slips, and people was helping them. And people were doing everything they could, and these people were real. And for this 19-year-old little guy named Huey, it was the most refreshing thing I'd ever seen in my life. It was like for the first time in my life, I thought, "My God, red monkeys. My God, red monkeys." What's the name of that little kid's movie about the things that went extinct? Come on, you guys. The big thing that went extinct. What was it? Huh? No, come on, man. That big thing with the big tusks. The Willy Mammoth! I was like, "The Willy Mammoth, man, I'm out there looking and looking, and there ain't nothing, there ain't no other Willy Mammoths, I'm the only one." And I'm pretending like I ain't no Willy Mammoth, you know. You know. And all of a sudden I walk into a room and there's five or six Willy Mammoths. And I'm not saying that I was thrilled because they were rich and famous and had alligator shoes. I was thrilled because they were being honest. They were sharing their hearts. Nobody had shared their heart with me. I thought I was the only boy that had a heart. Nobody else sharing it. Nobody else rolling down and saying how scared they were or what was happening for them or that they didn't belong or that they didn't know any of this stuff. So when I came and rolled in and started running into Willie Mammoths, I'm telling you, I was thrilled. And for the first time, that light of hope came on. And I realized that maybe there was a way for Huey to learn how to be happy. Maybe there was hope for Huey. Now, I got to tell you, when I say it's a program of attraction rather than promotion, I was thrilled to see people that had wealth. I was thrilled to see people that had boats and had nice cars and had, you know, the stuff going on. I don't want to tell you. It is a program of attraction, and that is what attracted Huey. Because when I got here, I didn't want kids or I didn't want no education. I wanted a Porsche and a Cadillac on the river. That's it. I didn't have a woman in that equation. I know kids in that equation. A Porsche and a Cadillac on the river. And that's what I was taught would make me happy. Today, I would gladly roll that Porsche and that Cadillac into the river just to have an hour-long conversation with Kevin Adams or Bill Temples or Jimmy Silverman or any number of people that have been in my life that have been so much more valuable than any material gift that I could be given. And when I got here, I didn't want any of it. And you guys had to break down this 19-year-old punk, and you had to give him a reason to live, and then you had to completely rework his values. But until they were reworked, don't get me, I loved it when I saw the fancy cars. And I loved it when I saw the bling. So I'm not going to be apologizing to anybody that's out there rolling with that kind of stuff. God bless you. When I got here, I had to pretend everything. I pretended to have an education. I pretended that I could read. I pretended that I could act like normal people. I, to this day, don't think I have a high school diploma. Or I know I don't have a high school diploma, but I don't think I got a GED. And it's 42 years since then, you guys. But having said that, like the lady said, if you can let your dreams live, and you can use the power of this program, you can light this light up, you this world up. You can go for it. You can have everything. And if you don't let your dreams live, guess what? You ain't going to be attractive. They say service. You want to be a service. Wipe that frown off your face. Climb your ass into this moment and allow the joy that is the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous right here, right now, to touch your heart. I know you're breaking up with your wife and that your kids are leaving and you got a custody battle. I know you got all that stuff going. But right now, you know what you got? You got a room full of like-minded people that genuinely care about you. You're here trying to learn a little bit more how to live in a right way. You're here with people that are hopefully telling the truth and sharing their heart with you. And that makes you magical people. You have fallen down some hole where the rabbit was going. And you think it's the most worst thing in the world because you're now an addict. And I believe that it's great God's greatest gift that He can give us is the gift of addiction. Because in the end, it is the depth of your darkness that will determine the height of your light. So you take all that darkness and all those slips and all of that stuff that you bring to this and you turn it into what God intended it to be. An opportunity for some scared little punk ass kid to grab on to one shred of hope and you pull him up and you don't do that being sad, and don't do it being depressed. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying don't be sad and depressed. I'm saying be authentic. I'm saying be authentic. And I'm saying that, yes, I said nothing about the steps, that didn't have anything to do with it. When I wanted to fly an airplane, all I wanted to do was fly an airplane. Well, in order to fly an airplane, you have to read the books. You have to learn a lot of stuff with all those instruments. But I just wanted to fly an airplane. So eventually I did all those books. And I pulled back. And that airplane left the ground with a guy that was too dumb to read any of those gauges. And he left this earth flying his own airplane. Now, the way you get there is the steps. Once you want what we got, then you got to go to the books. You got to go to the people. And you got to make this stuff happen. Because I assure you, if you do not get to the underlying causes and conditions, we got a problem, Houston. So you can come in here all you want. You can look and bling it out and spun around and everything. But at some point, if we keep going into that old toolbox, we're going to keep pulling up that tool called anger, righteousness. You know what my favorite tool is? Self-pity. Do you know what the most dangerous person in the world is today? The most dangerous person in the world today is a victim. For a victim can justify anything. Come on. You might as well just own it. If you got it, wear it. I got it. 42 years later, I can still do a 10-step and come up with 5 times during the day where I felt like a victim. So if you keep reaching into those toolboxes and pulling up that righteousness and that anger and that resentment. You know, people say resentment's the number one offender. I totally disagree. I love disagreeing with anything. Resentment got nothing. The propellant for a resentment is self-pity. And I'm going to tell you, it feels good. And I'm not saying I wasn't a victim. I was a victim of sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. I had it all. But guess what? Who's responsible for Huey's happiness today? Wow! What a concept! So you can go on blaming everybody as much as you want. But that ain't going to work. It don't work. And if you got it, you'll feel like it every day. But you don't have to act on the self-pity. If you have a right spiritual condition, spend a little time doing a little meditation, being quiet in the morning, work with your sponsor a little bit, do all this stuff, and you can check that stuff. And to be authentic with you today, are you going to give me 5 minutes of warning or something? Huh? 5 minutes left now? Okay, give me my 5 minutes of warning. 7 minutes left. Where was I? Huh? What? Did you say horny? Oh. Some of our ways die hard. Yeah, that, I mean, if I was being authentic, I suppose that might be part of it too. But now, having said that, in order for me to be authentic and real, I have to be straight up with you and where I'm at. And I'd love to tell you, like a lot of people jumping up at the podium, things are going great and everything's going great and I got lots of money and I got this and that and I've just graduated and I'm this, you know, everything. You know, that just ain't the way it's flying for me, you guys. You know, I showed up for life. I started my own business. I gave it everything I had. I overdid everything I did. Anything worth doing is worth doing to extreme. I'd love to tell you that shortcoming's been removed from me, but it hasn't. You know, I got a little bit of success going here. And you know why I got it going here? You know why I got that airplane? I'm not bragging to you guys today. I'm telling you about Narcotics Anonymous. I'm telling you what happens if you show up and tell somebody the truth about your dreams. The world in this program will jump in behind you and help your stuff come true. And if you're afraid to own it, then it's yours to take to your grave with you. But so I had a little success in that and got this going, got that. And, you know, I finally got, had an advertising company for a lot of years and moved out to the country, White Post, Virginia, near Winchester, and started a little business and all. And I was just cranking and everything went in the dumpster. Everything went in the dumpster. And I lost my home last May. It was everything I had in my life. It was all the money that I ever scrounged up. It was everything I had, and I put it into this house, and I watched it kind of disintegrate in front of my eyes. And I know I'm not the only one out there that's ever gone through this, but those men were authentic, and I need to be authentic. I need to not portray somebody up here that's not real. And Huey being real took one of the heaviest hits of his life. He had to sit on the courthouse and watch him auction off his life in his house, and you know, had to wait for the sheriff to come and all that stuff, and had to not sleep for days and days on end, figuring out what the hell I was going to do with my family. And in the midst of all that, I had people calling me up saying, "Look, man, I ain't got much, but you got it. Come on, bring your family. You can have the garage here." My wife said, "Let's do it," you know, and a lot of people were there behind me. And at the last second, when it was all said and done, the new owner came in, and I was getting ready to rip his face off, because that's what we do when you come onto your property after you lost it in an auction and some guy comes up, you tear his face off. And I didn't tear his face off. I didn't. And he started talking to me, and at the end he said, "You know, I like what you're doing. How would you like to keep that house? I'll sell it back to you for half of what you paid for it. I'll rent it to you for half of what your mortgage is." And I sit there today, coming up on that year, and one more time, God is doing for me that which I cannot do for myself. So when I sit up here tonight and I talk about this is a program of attraction rather promotion, I can tell you that I can tell you where you're at in your program by the depth of your network and the intimacy that you have with the friends around you. This is a disease of isolation. It is our inability to form lasting relations that is at the core of our issues. And the number one thing for Huey today is a joy shared is a joy doubled, and a sorrow shared is a sorrow halved. I say to people all the time, you're going to need meds if you don't work this program. And if you work this program, you ain't going to look pretty. Because you got to share this stuff. And you got to cut it in half over and over again, or that trash can will fill up and that trash can will explode. So if you want to be the greatest gift that you can be, the greatest gift on this planet is the gift of attraction. Don't talk to me. Don't tell me what it's about. Get the hell up. Be the light. Go out dancing. Take people dancing. Go camping. Go on those trips. I don't care how old you are. Get out of your ass. Get out of your bed and make it happen for the newcomer. Show them by your actions that this is just the beginning and not the end. Thank you.
Danny Addict, it's an honor and a privilege to introduce my friend, hails from the Baltimore area, sharing on Step 11. Help me welcome Frank.
Hey family, I'm a recovering addict named Frank. Thank you. That was really inspiring. This one here. Again, hi family, I'm a recovering addict, my name's Frank. And I'd like to thank the Chesapeake Potomac Region Program Committee for calling me and asking me a little bit over a month ago to share on this topic. You know, I'm real tired, but it's been a great day today. It's been a great day, my spirit's been filled. Been a lot of love in Narcotics Anonymous. Lots happened today, a lot of reflecting on my own recovery. My clean date's February 25th, 1992, and I got clean in this region back in 92, you know, and I've had the opportunity to serve on committees here and be a part of our message here, and to watch us be a vision of hope, you know. And so I haven't missed this convention in 21 years in a row here, you know, and I was just real filled up just a little bit ago, you know, standing up for my clean time, you know, and which I truly know is a gift from God. You know, thank you again. Listen, I've had in my own eyes, in my own heart, some material success. You know, a lot of victories happened in my life since I've been clean. You know, been a lot of pitfalls. There's been a lot of rebellion with God. The word God, I was so rebellious with God growing up as a kid. You know, I came from a family that celebrated Christmas, and I was bar mitzvahed. Wow. So I had a lot of misconceptions about the word God and what my belief in God. You know, I always believed God abandoned me. You know, my belief system and my belief about myself, as a child, because of a lot that happened when I was a kid. I didn't feel worthy enough for God, you know, and I'm just making it back to Narcotics Anonymous, clean, through grace and a prayer. You know, listen, I ain't got no spectacular speaking commitment here. I'm just going to share. I'm just going to share, you know, and when you've been asked to do this multiple times throughout your recovery, it's a great honor. It's a great honor, you know, but it was only through grace that I'm still clean and I'm back in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and I really be honest with you, I never thought I was coming back for a little while. I never thought that I'd be back in Narcotics Anonymous. I was here last year and I was like caught up in the grip, and my body, mind, and spirit wasn't present here, you know, and right before, and it works how and why before this step, and the 10th step, it says, complacency is the number one offender with clean time. You know, listen, I didn't like God when I was growing up. When I was 11 and a half years old, I found out that I was adopted. And my first resentment, my first betrayal, my first hate, the self-hatred I had against myself was all about God, because I was adopted. And like, and from that moment, like everybody who ever told me that they loved me left me. You know, when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, listen, when I got here, this was nothing. I thought that I was going to stay here this long. Listen, I didn't like Narcotics Anonymous, man. When I was on the streets, I seen people who got clean. I didn't want to come here. I wasn't real excited about getting here either. I was okay with the pain out there on the streets for a long time. But I remember there was that one moment of clarity that I had used with this one guy, and he got to Narcotics Anonymous before me. He's still clean today. And when he got here before me, I just had that one moment of clarity. And I remember getting out of Upper Marlboro, the county detention center in PG County. The phone call was 15 cents. And I called him and I said, listen, I'll try NA. You know, and I wasn't asking for God. I wasn't asking for God yet. I wasn't asking for God. You know, the pain is what kept me here. The pain is what kept me coming. You know, in my first, when I had 92 days clean, my mom died. You know, I had no understanding about the serenity prayer. You know, I circle up in meetings and I did it because you did it, you know. And I said I had a higher power because you had a higher power, you know. And And I just rocked through it, man. I cold turkeyed right here in the rooms, you know, I detoxed right here. There was no orange juice for me. There was nobody like just tap me along the way. They said, work the steps or die, motherfucker. That's how I got clean. I mean, it just wasn't a bowl of cherries. Every day was a gift. And I just sat still and I cried and I felt my feelings and I rocked through it. You know, and I just kept coming, and I just kept coming. But then there was a prayer that I started asking God, and I said, listen, God, if this is going to work for me, please give me the opportunity. Please give me the opportunity to get 30 days. Please give me the opportunity to get 60 days. And when I got 90 days, and 2 days later, my mom died, and I was real lost. I was real lost because my prayers started changing because I didn't want to get loaded. I just didn't want to live anymore. You know, all that guilt and embarrassment and the betrayal that I did to my mom. Because listen, I was raised up in a real great family. But when I found out that I was adopted, it just turned my whole perception about me, about God, people, you know, into a vicious cycle, and I became real self-hatred. I had this hurt and this anger that I betrayed and to keep you away from me. I was just a little boy who was scared. I was so scared when I got here. I didn't want to just be hugged. I just wanted to be accepted. And when somebody told me they were going to love me, that you were going to tell me that you were going to love me till I learned how to love myself, I got my first shot of hope when my mom died. Nobody from Active Addiction showed up. Narcotics Anonymous showed up. You know, Narcotics Anonymous showed up. The second step started working in my life without me even asking. Without me even asking, you know. And I started watching God work in my life. Because I didn't understand why Narcotics Anonymous and members in here were like just taken to me. They were accepting me for who I was. Listen, I had the ability to just tell you at the group that I was in pain. My mom died. I needed help. And like things started changing in my life. And what it started changing was my prayer life. Because I started hearing in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous that prayer was my greatest source of strength and courage. And I started praying. And I started praying. Listen, when I got here, I was a fire barrel bum. I was a Skid Row bum. That's it. I was just a straight bum. I didn't get here thinking that I was going to have to pay bills. I didn't think that responsibilities were going to... Listen, I came from living in a shed. When you're living in a shed, you ain't paying bills. When you're sleeping in apartment complexes in the laundry rooms, you're not paying bills. If you're giving blood, I was giving blood for a living. That was the first paycheck I ever had with my name on it. So I didn't get here with no skills. I didn't get here like learning how to be responsible. And listen, Narcotics Anonymous started slowly teaching me how to be responsible. There wasn't when I got clean, there were no recovery houses. There was just like sleep on the couch and go get a job. That's what it was. Go get a job. Let me get it right. Go get a job. And that's what I started doing. I started working and I started like trying to be responsible. And the first year clean, I never did so much praying, I thought, in my life. Because I had 3 children from active addiction. And I used to ask God all the time, why did you give me these children? Why did you give me 3 children in active addiction? I remember when my youngest son, Elijah, was born. And they kicked me out of PG County Hospital. And they said, listen, your son's born, but you got to leave now. Yeah. And I remember walking down 295 with my head down in the freezing cold. And I was asking God, why are you giving me a child? I have no lights, no electricity. We're getting ready to get evicted out on the streets. And why are you giving me these children here? And I couldn't understand that for the longest time until I got clean. And God was giving me an opportunity because the truth is, I believe God didn't want to see my 3 children see me die in active addiction. You know, and my 3 children are very healthy today. They're really good children. You know, they haven't had to see their dad use in 21 years. You know, and but I look back at that and I see why today God gave me another opportunity. But see, throughout recovery, things have changed throughout my recovery and my prayer life. You know, and how my prayer life has changed because I was listening to you share. It's been beyond my wildest dreams because God's answered a lot of prayers for me. A lot of prayers, but it's took a lot of work. It's took a lot of work to be able to do the things beyond my wildest dreams. Me and my friend Jimmy say it all the time. Ain't nobody got it better than us. And that's the truth. And if I really look at it, most people from where we come from, when we enter the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, sometimes most of us get hope right out of the gate. And I held on to that. I held on to Doreen coming to my home group after my mom died. She shared my home group with 95 days clean, and she said it's going to be all right. I've held on to that message for 21 years and change. And that message has rocked me through a lot of storms. At a year clean, I buried my grandfather. At 5 years clean, I buried my grandmother. You know, and let me just try to get right where I'm at right now, because that's where I need to share out of my heart right now, right where I'm at. You know, at 10 years clean, I just moved to Baltimore, you know, and me and the mother and my daughter were together, and I had a lot of men in my life I've used as leaders, you know, and I asked God to put these men in my life to be leaders so that I could follow these men, you know, and their parents and their husbands, you know, and I used these men as vital tools in front of me, you know, and I've always dreamed big. House, white picket fence, family. That's always been my dream. It's always been my dream here. You know, and mostly all my recovery, that's how I've dreamed. You know, and I moved to Baltimore, and 10 years clean, me and the mother and my daughter separated, you know, and what I thought was a curse was a blessing. What I thought was a trick was a treat. You know, and I had a little baby girl. You know, and at 10 years clean, I was living in Baltimore City. I was $14,000 in arrears child support. And my little girl was born, you know. And a couple months later, we separated, and she left me for a woman. You know, and it crushed me for a while. You know, and I ended up staying in Baltimore, you know. And I didn't run, I didn't quit, and I didn't hide. And I was listening to you talk about taking the advantage of life for your family, you know, and I had this courage, and I had this strength, and I said, you know something, I'm going to provide for my daughter. I'm going to go out here and do the best that I can for my daughter, and I really did, I really gave it everything I did. I shoveled rat shit for $45 a day. I paid that $14,000 off child support back here in PG County, right, and I started providing for my daughter, you know, and then my relationship with God started like really changing, because my belief system in God was that I really started believing God wanted me to have the best, you know, and I'd worked through my prejudice issues and I really came to a place of acceptance. I had done some work with my relationship with my real mom and why she left me and why my real dad left me, you know, and through that, relationships in my life started getting real stronger, and through that, I had the opportunity to be front row in my daughter's life, you know, and about 4 years ago, I got married, you know, another dream, you know, me and my wife had an ugly divorce here in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, I held on tight here. You know, I really held on tight. And after the divorce, I found myself, I had my home, and I got a phone call, you know, it was the mother of my daughter, and she had gotten loaded after 14 years. And I went to go pick her up and my kids and bring them into my home now, you know, she's still clean today. You know, and throughout those periods of time that I was raising my daughter and the relationship with me and the mother of my daughter, we became real cordial, and a lot had happened. A lot had happened throughout those years, you know, it was like the sky was the limit. Me and my daughter were doing a lot of things together. We were going a lot of places, Walt Disney World, la-di-da, la-di-da, you know, I had stayed out of relationships for a couple years almost, it felt like, because I was hurting. And I thought I had done the work with me and my ex-wife when we separated, you know, I dated a couple women.
Another step suggests that if we'd like to, we can go into our communities and build a relationship with God. You know, and I took that suggestion. You know, and I let myself off the hook with my divorce. You know, and I had gotten a lot of peace with it. You know, and I really believed that I knew that was not my last shot at love. You know, so I took a risk again. And listen, this is real humbling for me. Because a lot of people with time ain't going to come right here and share this. I know that. I'm not running off of ego, image, and pride. I'm just trying to stay clean another day. I didn't think I was making it back to NA. I honestly didn't think I was coming back here. It was people like Danny, because I had commitments, and he was calling and asking people back home where I was at. 3,000 miles away, Jimmy was asking, where am I at? I had 300-something numbers in my phone a year and a half ago of Narcotics Anonymous members, frontline members of NA. 6 months ago, there was only one left in my phone. It was a prayer that I was a moment of silence again, clean. I had left Narcotics Anonymous. I was behind the enemy lines. I fell in love with a nice lady, a nice person with kids and my children, but I walked away from Narcotics Anonymous, y'all. And she started getting loaded. The addict got loaded, and I stayed. And the last year and a half, you were talking about losing things. I lost everything but my clean date. I lost homes. I lost cars. I was walking down the streets clean, the freezing cold and the rain. And you know what I was holding on? Just to one more prayer. All I kept hearing was, hell and high water, no matter what today, don't use. That's all I was listening to. Listen, I wasn't in meetings. I wasn't in my home group. I was ashamed. And I kept going back for one more, trying to create a dream again. I was sick and tired. I felt like I was so beat up. I thought all my dreams here were over with. I felt like the failure again. And I had lost myself once and for all. I was so empty. I come to meetings, people would say, oh, did you get loaded? No, I didn't get loaded. I'm here, but I understand why you're asking me. I was in a place of darkness. I had never been clean. I didn't like myself. I was so ashamed to come back here and tell you, listen, I'm back there again. You know, people judge me and they push me. And I understood. They didn't know. I understand how vigilant you can be in your recovery. I was vigilant here for 20 years and I stopped it. I just stopped the process. Complacency happened so quick. I was behind enemy lines. I was with a using addict, copping, with 20 years clean. Listen. I'm sharing this because it might be you. You're the one who might get caught up. I didn't want to leave. I remember the big storm that we had here on the East Coast, right? And we were all sitting at the table. And Monopoly has a new board out now, if anybody knows. Monopoly has their games, like, expanded. So it's got new places you can buy on the board. Now I'm sitting there. She's loaded. And the kids are there. And we're playing Monopoly. I hadn't talked to nobody in the rooms for weeks and months. So we're playing Monopoly, and I'm looking at the board, right? And I'm looking at all the places on the board, and I've been to every one. Waikiki Beach, Hollywood, Texas Stadium, Las Vegas, right? Narcotics Anonymous gave me a vision without limits, a cold-blooded bum like myself. I said, man, I've been to all those places only because of you. And I was looking at the board, and I said, man, this is not where I'm supposed to be. I don't supposed to be. But in the process of that, I was crying out to God, God, help me. God gave me enough courage. I called the police on myself one time.
Right?
and went back. And went back. Listen, I got 5 minutes. I'm going to tell you, only in Narcotics Anonymous. A month and a half ago, I got another home. 12-step says we might not want to bring a using addict into our home. And the step working God. I think it even says they might take our TV. Does it say that? Okay. Kind of. Well, she took the house. The judge seemed fit for me to come back to my house. Empty. Listen. I want to thank you, Kenneth. There's someone for everyone in here. I want to thank you, Kenny, for taking me to meetings again. I want to thank you, Ruben, for hugging me in our home groups. I want to thank Narcotics Anonymous because when I was walking down the street, and all I had was this little phone. And I had a couple numbers still in Narcotics Anonymous, right? And I was watching my home, and I was leaving, walking down the street in the rain with a little bag of clothes. And I made one call, and I called the mother and my daughter, right? Only in Narcotics Anonymous, y'all. And I said, listen, Angie, I just lost my home. She didn't say, I told you so. She said, where are you at? I said, I'm walking down the street right now, maybe 5 blocks away. She said, you're not going to be homeless. You come here. I said, I'm getting my home back in a month. She said, you come here. So I went to my daughter's house, right? I've been staying there for the last month and some change, right? Now, she lives upstairs with her and my daughter and the kids. Downstairs is another apartment in this house. That's my ex-wife and her kids. Jigga, they love me. George J., they love me. Last Saturday night, we were sitting outside. Both of us had my ex-wife here and the mother of my daughter here. I made a difference in my stepchildren's life at one time. They love me. I haven't missed a meal. Every time I show up at the house, what can we do for you? What can we do for you? Now we see you at the lowest of the lowest, but we're not going to let you die. We don't want you to get loaded. They've helped me furnish some of my place, my house. And listen, you know something? Only in NA. Only in NA. Thank you. I keep coming back.